And welcome back to the show, everyone. My name is Brian Elam. I will be your host in this Be Successful series. And today, I believe we're going to have a really special conversation with this woman. I have Dorothy Martin Neville here with us today, and she has lived an amazing life of transition and evolution and evolved into helping leaders find themselves and find the meaning in what they do. And underneath that, an umbrella of happiness, finding your true purpose and living out of a conscious choice versus a chaotic searching for a solution. So this is going to be a great conversation, folks. Hit the record button. Make sure you watch this, share it with your friends. Now, Dorothy, thank you so much for coming on. It is an honor to have you here.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it. I love to start at the beginning, and you and I were talking a little bit before we hit the record button about your journey, where your life has gone, the experiences that you've had. So if you could kind of just give us the highlights of your journey, your evolution so far, and then we'll get right into leadership, because I know the entrepreneurs that watch this channel are interested in how to be a better leader and being a more, I guess, connected to themselves leader.
Right.
Take us on that journey.
All right, quickly. I was raised in an orphanage from the day I was born. I was in an orphanage in Boston, and eventually adopted a few years later by an Irish alcoholic cop who was a very violent individual. So I was raised in the housing projects with gangs and situations that you can see typically in a housing project area. And my way out, I wasn't allowed to go to college or nursing school. Although I was a great student, I went to an unaccredited inner city high school. So no nursing school in the United States could accept me. So my way out of the projects was to become a Catholic nun. So I became a Catholic nun for a number of years. And with a long black habit, Mother Superior had said, I'm going to send you to college. And I said, Mother, they won't let me in. But somehow Mother Superiors can be intimidating, even to deans of universities. So when she called and said, I'm sending this woman over, they allowed me in. Once you have a BA, nobody cares where you went to high school. And so I then the rest of it was just whatever journey I chose. Eventually, years later, I left religious life and moved to Manhattan, became an international airline stewardess, and really saw the world. It was my first time I had gone from the projects to religious life. So I now got to see the world and travel to countries all over and see what a beautiful world we live in. And eventually got married. I was married for 15 years and had two exquisite children. And when I was divorced, they were very young, kindergarten and fourth grade. And I went back at my master's and became a therapist in private practice. And as a therapist in private practice, I was blessed 3 months in. When you love what you do, and I think this is a huge piece, that when you love what you do, people are drawn to you. They're drawn to your joy. They're drawn to your passion. They're drawn to your vibrancy. And nobody knew me. So I went in for 3 months. I spoke at every church, every synagogue, every book club, every women's group, every place that would let me speak. I was there just to let people know my message of personal empowerment, personal responsibility to make your life and the world a better place. And I was blessed. Within 3 months, I had a 6-month waiting list that lasted almost 20 years. And about 3 years in, I started to notice that certain personalities were coming in with particular diseases. So when I spoke to friends who were MDs and specialists, I said, have you noticed, you know, you're a lung specialist, that most of your clients are dealing with issues around grieving and difficulty in transition in life and all of its changes? I said, no, it's coincidental. And I said, I don't think so. And I would speak to others and talk about their personality with these all were coming in with breast cancer or autoimmune disorders or fibromyalgia. And they'd say, no. So I knew there was something to that. So I then spent the next maybe 8 years becoming certified in 9 different modalities of integrative healthcare. Took the best of all of them, combined them with my experience in therapy, and created my own method. And my waiting list folks knew I moved a massage table into my office, asked me if I would please teach them what I know while they're waiting to work with me on a one-to-one. And I opened up 6-week classes in self-healing through the human energy field. And before I knew it, 32 people had signed up, and all this was pre-internet. I just had flyers in my waiting room, and I offered it and thought, wow, this is amazing. I offered it again, and it kept going, and the same group of people kept coming, and they said, you need to create a substitute program much more. So I ended up, in a long, long story short, with a 4-year program, founded the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences, and away we went. And a good portion of my students were physicians, nurses, OTs, PTs, massage therapists, Reiki masters, and folks like that. And others were simply people who wanted to become healers, who were called to really make this world a better place through hands-on healing. And because there are so many ways to be a healer in the world, and that was the way in which they chose to do it. So that was it. And I ended up, my work, my third and fourth year students had to do medical internships, and they flew in from all over the country, in Canada and Australia and the Caribbean, to study with me. So whatever country or state they lived in, they could do the medical internship. So I ended up with 63 positions. I needed to hire preceptors to work with these hospitals to oversee the medical internships. And eventually I couldn't be the only teacher. There was far too many students. So I had teachers and TAs and preceptors and full-time staff, and the business kept growing. And one of the things I learned was, as an entrepreneur, you need to identify your dreams, what you're called to. I believe our soul, our essence, the word is irrelevant to me, that, but something within us calls us to become what we're meant to be through the dreams that we have, through the visions we have of who we want to be, and how we want to make this world a better place. And those dreams come to help us become what we're here to do. And so I did that, and it just got so successful in the hospitals that they now wanted to give me grant funding to research my work with various diseases. And because I had received grant funding from NIH to research my work and my doctoral dissertation, so I opened up a nonprofit so hospitals could give us funding to research my work with Alzheimer's, with sundowning, with other diseases. And you know, when you know where you're going, you're ahead of your dream and you're guiding it. When you don't, such as with my school, I just kept responding to the requests from students. You know, do this, have this school. And then one of my students was a head of cardio, assistant head of cardiology at a hospital here, and said, we want to open up an integrative health department, and I want to do it with you. I've seen other modalities that are weekend trainings. Yours was 4 years. You're like a medical school or a nursing school. We want to be affiliated with you. So eventually we're affiliated with hospitals across the country. And, you know, I had to become the woman, because the person who can, the solopreneur, is not the person who can run a company with 63 people on the payroll.
Right,
You
absolutely.
have got to grow to become the person that can have that on your payroll and then have another company. So I've now got a private practicing 42 patients a week, plus a school with all these employees, plus a nonprofit. You have to keep growing and growing. And as you grow, I believe the universe, the Holy Spirit, whatever your faith system, makes it possible for so much more, makes it possible for you to keep growing and keep having greater impact and greater influence in the world. And so you best keep growing personally as well as professionally. And if you can grow personally first, you can bring your business with you rather than catching up with it.
So as you made this growth journey from the solopreneur to someone that is running three businesses with multiple employees, is that when you started to get into this development or this idea of leadership and how to integrate the soul's journey into that? Is that how that started to happen? Was your personal journey?
Yeah, what happened for me was, I never, you know, coming from the housing projects, I never knew one a woman who had ever been to school, but ever been to college. I never knew anybody who had ever opened up a business. Coming from the projects, everybody worked for somebody, you know, maybe the firemen, maybe they became firemen or policemen, but they usually worked as auto mechanics or somebody, you know, in Jordan Marsh in our local retail stores. So I had no idea how to do business. And so when all of that happened, and then I got all these employees, I had to quickly learn how to be a leader. I had to quickly not just be a nice lady who has a company. But I had a really hard time. I will say for about 5 years, I always thought of myself as just a woman with a couple of businesses. It never dawned on me I was a businesswoman. And there's a huge difference there. All right. When you just see yourself as somebody who's got a couple of businesses, that's sort of like, I bake bread and make jams or something, it's just this little thing I do on weekends. But when you can identify, I'm a businesswoman, it's like you sit differently, you walk differently, you think of yourself differently, you start looking at finances differently, because,
You've claimed ownership.
of all of it. And then all of a sudden, I'm responsible for these people's lives. I have employees. I'm helping them feed their children. I'm helping them pay their mortgage or pay their rent. Oh my God. I'm now a business leader. And growing into that identity was as important as knowing the people I hired, was important as knowing the culture I was developing for my businesses. It was as important as identifying that I'm making far more money than I am spending so that my company is a solvent. Right. So it really called for a very different change in me. And what ended up happening as we grow, our clients change. As we grow, our businesses grow and change, correct?
Oh,
So
absolutely.
the people coming into my private practice now started to be very different people because my reputation was spreading in different circles. So I was now working with people who were leading companies or who were working for corporate here in Connecticut, where I live at the moment. There was a lot of insurance people who were moving up the ladder in the insurance companies. So it's like, whoa. And then financial planners and lawyers and physicians coming in. So all of a sudden, leaders in their industries and looking at the difficulty some of those folks had in being leaders and looking at the price they were paying to be so-called successful. And it was really sometimes extremely high. And so eventually I dropped my son off at Cornell University. My daughter just graduated from Georgetown. My son went to Cornell. And I drove home into this huge house I owned and sat there like a good Irish girl with a glass of wine and just looking at my glass of wine and thinking, okay, girl, you're in your 40s and the world is yours. What do you want to do? Your babies are gone, right? So what do you want to do? And realized how unhappy I was, how theoretically successful I was, but that I was now living in a house that was a vacuum. There was nobody running up and down the stairs, no soccer team coming over for dinner, with hot dogs and hamburgers and chicken wings and pizzas and all these things that boys can just keep eating. And it's like, where do you want to go? I get a smaller house. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I want out of here. So I picked up the phone, called American Airlines, said, get me a one-way ticket to Anguilla in the British West Indies. Called an agent, said, put my house on the market. And notified my office that I was going to be leaving the country in 3 weeks. I was moving to the Caribbean, where I lived for 10 years on a little island, 32 square miles in the Caribbean with 6,000 inhabitants and one paved road. And I lived there for 10 years, commuting back and forth to America every 2 months to teach at my school, to be on the speaking circuit. Wayne Dyer and I had the same agent here on the East Coast, so I may speak on the East Coast. I'm past president of the National Speakers Association here in Connecticut. I've been speaking about 30 years.
I
So
believe it. You're very eloquent in your speech. There's no ums, there's no okays, like all of that stuff. Like you, it's a gift for sure.
Oh,
And
thank
it's
you.
been developed. So yeah, kudos.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's so kind of you. But I just did all of that and then 10 years later, was called back by one of my former students. They had received a multi-million dollar grant at UConn Medical School, and I was asked to be on the advisory board and the co-chair of the advisory board to oversee energy medicine research across the country, to become a clinical instructor at UConn Medical School, and to take my work across the country. And my heart said, I love swimming 2 hours every day in the Caribbean, and I love dancing 6 nights a week and eating fresh fish 2 hours after it's caught and just living a different. But at the same time, my passion was if I could impact the world, starting with the US and making healthcare something that people recognize is in their hands, that our thoughts, our beliefs, our way of life impacts our health far more than so many other things, then coming back to America sounded like a great idea. So I came back here.
Now,
And
was that a function of your passion lining up with the invitation to come back, or was that you following again that invitation, like just like you did with your students to develop your curriculums and programs?
What it was much more of that somebody said, this is an opportunity you can have to take your world of healthcare to the world in a bigger way. And I didn't jump. I took a few days and then so that I was going to walk into this. I was not going to catch up with it. What do I want to do with the rest of my life? Do I want to stay here and keep running my school from a distance? I had amazing executive directors. I was on the phone every morning with the United States and with my office and planning and doing things. And when I was back here, we would have intensive meetings. But it was a decision. What do I, a very conscious decision, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And it was at that point in making a conscious decision, I want to expand the world of healthcare. I want to educate people in how to take this to the next level, how to take their health back, how to take their life purpose back. And so coming back here, I came back with that conscious intent that if I go back to America, which I never thought I'd come back to, but if I go back to America, that's what I will do. And coming back here, discovered a sense of entitlement that had never existed before. My students had changed dramatically at that point. They didn't want to do homework. They didn't want to do personal process. It was 4 years because 50% of my curriculum was on deep personal process. I don't believe you can truly be an effective healer if you haven't done your own healing. We are never done till the day we go home. We're not finished growing and expanding and healing. But
Absolutely.
you haven't done intensive work for, in my program was 4 years. How can you truly see the wound of somebody else without judgment? How can you truly see, period, the wounds that exist and know how to heal them? Because the more you have self-awareness, the more you have self-love and understanding of your strengths and your limitations and your vulnerabilities and your wounds and your defenses, the more you have that, the more compassionate and understanding you are for everybody you work with.
You're
Right?
100% right. 100% right. And it is so hard. You and I were talking before how I was a massage therapist for the previous 10 years. And I found that within my own practice as well. Some people I was able to connect with and truly hold that space for them so easily. But then others were more challenging to me. And I know that it was because of something that is residing still within me. So I completely know and understand what you're saying there is correct.
The first year in my program was all about teaching you about your relationship with self. And then the second year of the program is teaching you how all of that within you, the wounds and the strengths and the limits, how do they deal with people with all of those character structures? How do you do that? Because are you comfortable with that person who's not home? Where somebody walks in and they're off in another world and in La La Land and they're not here with you. Are you excited by that because they're safe? Do you want to slap them because you want them to show up and nobody's present? What and all of that's about you, but
Yes.
you can shake your head, but it's about the massage therapist, it's about the healer, it's about the business person. So I don't care if your business is selling bathtubs. If you have no tolerance for that person who's frightened of making a mistake, what impact are you having on your business? Because that anger is going to cause them to go elsewhere where somebody will see them and they don't feel judged, they don't feel wounded. And if you've done your work where maybe your mother or your father couldn't make decisions well, and you still have no tolerance for people who can't make decisions. So maybe your dad was very aggressive and you're terrified of people who are aggressive, and therefore you really can't be with them. You survive your sessions with them emotionally because you can't truly be there with them because you're still terrified of dad. Unless you've done that work, it's going to impact your relationship and you're going to keep picking partners and folks who remind you of the work you need to do. If you do the work, you no longer bring those aggressive, angry people in your life, or you no longer bring those indecisive people into your life. And the occasional one that shows up, you have great compassion for, and you're not intimidated by or angry with, because you see their humanity. Very different way of doing business. And so that was my expectation for my people. And when I come back, my students didn't want to do personal work. They didn't want to do homework. They wanted to be technicians. Teach me the techniques. Teach me all these techniques you developed to work with breast cancer, prostate cancer, autoimmune disorders, this one and this other. I don't train technicians, I train healers. No, I don't do that. And so eventually I closed the school, which meant closing the nonprofit, closing the other things. And thought, when I had my school, for every physician or nurse or massage therapist I worked with, I was impacting the thousands of people they were going to see over the course of their career, because they were bringing a new approach to healthcare. They were looking at inner peace. They were teaching what it means to be present to yourself. And at peace, then you don't have stress, which impacts the immune system, which impacts the adrenals, which makes us ill, right? So they were bringing a whole new approach to healthcare and an ability to work with energy to bring balance and peace to the body. So for every leader that I worked with, they were going to impact thousands. So when I made that choice to become a coach, my thought was to work with leaders. Because for every leader I can work with, if you change you, and I love your style, I love your approach, but you having a style and approach like this, every guest you bring on your show is being called to be present in a different way than if you spoke to their head. When you speak to
Yes.
somebody's heart and somebody's soul or somebody's essence, you call them in. So you see, by working with somebody in any profession and supporting them in doing this level of work, I can help impact every single guest they have on their show. I can help impact everybody that comes into the store, or if they have their own company, whatever that is. I can impact everybody they train. You know, my love would be at this point is now bringing my work to all of those who have these multi-million dollar coaching programs. Do any of them really teach psychodynamics? Do any of them really teach their coaches to identify the heart and soul of the people they work with? And how can I help them so these coaches going out there are going out as healers? You know, without the term healer, without doing hands-on energy work. But nonetheless, when you approach somebody from a place of peace, you're doing healing. Right?
Very
And
true.
I believe we're all called to be healers, and we all do it in a different way.
Yeah, I had a guest on my show a while back, and she made the statement that we are all here to activate someone else. And I think that falls right in line with what you're talking about, essentially that ripple effect and how you're starting at the top with healing this person who is this leader of the company. And that way, that ripple effect can go down into everyone in that organization. Obviously, that person's family and friends will be impacted as well. But my personal belief is that entrepreneurship is what is going to save our country and bring us the most opportunity and the most healing, not only for ourselves, but for the planet. And so I love the fact that you're focusing on helping these leaders find that happiness within themselves and trickle that down. So let's go into that, because that is obviously the meat of what we're here to discuss, is leadership and entrepreneurship. So when you begin working with someone, do you find that whatever the disconnect is within that person, that it is a function of a misinterpretation of their identity?
Many don't even have a sense of identity. What they believe they're doing is something that they enjoy or something that's going to make them a lot of money. They open up their business for a different reason. Entrepreneurs all have different reasons in doing what they do. Some open it because they're tired of working for corporate. They just want to do something and they grabbed something. Some do it because they feel this is their purpose in life. Some do it because this is a way to make big money. And that becomes really weak after a while. You get really lost when that's your purpose of founding a company. But entrepreneurs, I think I agree with you. When we really expand the ability for entrepreneurs, whether it's through tax changes and whatever may be in our different states, when we really encourage the development of small business, we develop creativity. Because there are things out there that I admire that I could never in a million years do. When I see people decorating cakes that are exquisite, or I see people working with children, I see people doing all kinds of things, I think, oh, that never would have dawned on me. And I certainly don't have the gift, but boy, I can sit back and admire and encourage people who are in the position to need those services to go there, to look at what's available to you. The creativity of entrepreneurs, the expansion of businesses through entrepreneurs, risking investing in themselves and investing in their vision and their skills and bringing it to the world. What an amazing development. And we know that we have more employees through entrepreneurial businesses than through corporate.
Right.
And we are here to make a vast, we're here to make a vast difference, whether you own one company or five. We're here to make a difference and really impact us, but impact them through our values as well as through whatever services we offer. Impact them through who we are. I truly believe who we are is the greatest gift we bring to our clients. It's not what we do, it's who we are.
Yeah, it's the one thing that can't be commoditized.
Right. So whether I have a hardware store and I'm selling you tools, if I can bring you confidence in using those tools or whatever you're building, not only have I sold tools, which I want to sell because it makes me business, but I've also created a customer that's going to keep coming back because I see him or her. And they then have the ability to say, I never thought about this before, but I feel so much confident working with you. Could you tell me, how do I add on this room? Or how do I do a wood ceiling? How do I bring up something or make a vaulted ceiling? What do I do? And who should I bring in? And architects, and bring in these. And you expand as somebody who owns a hardware store. You start realizing, boy, they're asking me questions. I better speak to architects. I better have an architect I can refer to. I better have a plumber I can refer to. So now your skill set as an entrepreneur develops, but you also become an amazing resource, and you're helping your clients grow and become better at what they do and who they are. And everybody wins. And I think entrepreneurs, we can do that because we've got the power to keep growing and changing and expanding our businesses to so that everybody wins in amazing ways we never knew about when we open up that business. If we're willing to keep growing and changing, we have an unlimited ability to have impact and influence.
And talking about growth and change, I wanted to touch on something and get your opinion on how important is it when you're working with these leaders to get them to publicly say the things that they are afraid of saying?
Such as.
Such as, let's see. Well, something you could say is like what I said earlier is I believe entrepreneurship is going to save this country, not the politicians. Now,
Right.
there might be some people that disagree with me on that.
Okay.
And that is not the kind of person that's going to resonate with my values and the energy that I'm trying to put out into this company. So that person would not be attracted to my services because we're not an energetic match. But I am speaking my truth and what I and my company stands for. So I attract the people to me and my company that would be a good fit, that we can help and change.
I would say there's two factors to that. Yes, it's so much easier to attract people that match our values, people that match our worldview. It's easier for them and it's easier for us to work with those. But some of those people who may not agree with you, we need corporate because corporates are really where it's at. Corporate is powerful and politicians are the most important people in the whole wide world. And they're going to stick with that. God bless them. Let them stick with that if that's their belief system. However, when you resonate a quality that they feel comfortable with, they may not like your value systems. But if you are somebody that makes them feel welcome just because they exist, they may end up coming back to you for whatever services it is you offer. And then that means you start resonating with what you have in common, because there isn't a person out here we don't have something in common with.
True.
And we just avoid the things that, unless obviously you're a therapist and you can't, or a coach, you can't go avoiding anything, because if you're truly going to help them, you have to confront all of it. But if I have a retail store or I have other kinds of services, I do business planning or accounting, then, unless the product you're selling goes against everything I believe in, then I can't do that. But if the product you're selling is fine with me, I just don't believe in your political thoughts. Well, then, if what I can bring to you is peace through your finances, I can bring trust, you trust me to be supporting you financially, then what happens is we get to impact a much broader group of people. We get to impact folks that we can bring them back into connection with their heart and their soul. Something they may have lost when they betrayed themselves to follow a politician or to follow a belief system that wasn't in alignment. So that's up to us. How great an impact and influence do we want to have? We can, and there's nothing wrong with solely working with people in resonance with me. But I can tell you, some of my clients have political belief systems that are diametrically opposed to mine. We don't discuss politics. In some, it depends on what my services are that I'm providing for them. We don't discuss it because it's not relevant to what I'm working with them on. All right.
Absolutely. And so there's two things that I wanted to ask you about, given this, where we're going down this rabbit hole. What do you feel about niching down?
If it's what you're called to do, go for it. I think that niching down can make you considered an expert in a particular arena. And if that's where you choose to be, go for it and give it everything you've got. You better know your audience. You better know where to market. You better know where to show up. You better know where to network. Know that whatever your dream is, know what that is and go for it. And I've seen some that niche down and they love everything they're doing exactly the way they're doing it. And they're serving an audience they want to work with. And I see others who are generalists. And for some, that works beautifully. And for some, it doesn't work well at all because they have to be so specific about what the global piece is that they're offering to each of their clients. And that's a lot more work. All right.
So what you would say essentially would be whether you fall into the line of niching down is a great thing or it is not a great thing. What matters most is what resonates with you and how you want to run your business and run your life.
Always, always. One of my clients had she was a project manager in a corporate world, and decided she wanted to open up an Airbnb. And she opened up and we expanded. She now has many, and I helped to get them booked up for 6 months in advance. Every single night was taken for 6 months in her Airbnbs. And then she said, okay, you know what I've been thinking of doing? She goes, I'm so excited. My dreams are working. I'm going to open up a restaurant in town that just became available, a breakfast lunch restaurant. Now, she's got very strong opinions politically, very strong opinions about handicapped, working with handicapped folks. And she's got it. And she doesn't ask anybody their faith, their politics, their anything. If they come in and they love her cooking, she loves serving them. Right. And it just works for her. Now, nobody's going to feel comfortable in that environment, but getting great political conversations going or getting other types of conversations going, if they're involved in hatred or exclusivity or things in this idea, because she's so absolutely inclusive. And so, what the energy she spreads in her businesses are all about being completely inclusive. And so those who are not comfortable with that energy won't go there. But that's who she's doing. And in doing so, she doesn't care who shows up because what she's showing you is unconditional love. What she's showing you is complete respect and presence. And if that makes you uncomfortable, you're not going to go back. If no matter what your faith is, whatever your thoughts are, if you feel comfortable in an environment where there's no animosity, where it's just like being in a family home, then you're going to go there to feel like you're part of the family. And you may leave and take your thoughts and your beliefs and your practices elsewhere. But in that context, you're there. Now, if she had a different kind of business, that would be very different, you know?
Right, a different type of service, something that would maybe have a chance to lean one way or another or whatever, but like with the idea of having, well, really two of our most basic needs that she's meeting. We need to sleep to rest and heal, and we need to eat in order to regenerate and have energy. So there's no human alive that doesn't need those things.
You're right. You're right. And so it really depends on what is your service and who is it? What's the culture you want to create in your company? Right? Because again, we'll just go back and I don't know where that came from, but that example of a hardware store. If I'm only going to serve people in my hardware store who have my political thoughts, you may be in deep doo-doo, all
You're not going
right?
to be building many houses.
But if what we talk about in my store is construction, right? Or is keeping your home mugs free or rat free or whatever, roach free, whatever it may be, then we've got a common interest. And when it comes to politics, you just let the subject go by. You don't deal with it because you don't want to discuss it. I don't care where you fall. You know, let's just keep it around hardware. Let's keep it around this. Then it works. But again, if I'm running an abortion clinic, then there's going to be real definitive stuff that who people I want coming around here and people I don't want coming around here, or whatever the case may be. It's who are you? What are your value systems? What are your belief systems? What impact and influence do you want to have in the world? And if it is niching down, go for it. If it's a broader appeal to bring the energy you choose to walk in to the largest amount of people possible, then that's what you do. You know, I'm never one to say there's one right way to do anything. You know, what works for you, because I believe we're all intrinsically holy and good. I believe we're all capable of unconditional love. We don't all choose to do that. We don't all choose those values. But if those are your values, how do you want to live it? Know your values. And that's, and for my folks, the first thing I do is, what is your value system? And if you've never thought about it, if you're going to work with me, it's one of the first things we're going to look at. What are your value systems? Because what are the five most important values you have in your life? Because if you're not conscious of those, you're going to be betraying them. So what are they? So I can help you live who you truly are. And then what is your dream? What is your vision for your business? What does that look like? Because if we know your values, we know the culture you're going to create in your company. And I use this as an example, but Uber was developed with an idea of making lots of money in 5 years, and then they were going to just get out and do whatever they were going to do. And therefore, somehow, culture wasn't important. And when we don't create a culture in our company, everybody who works for us creates their own. So there's no consistency, and it may not be the highest vibration, it may not be the highest energies. But if you create a culture based on your values, then you know who to hire, because I only work with people that fit the culture of the company. It doesn't matter how skilled you are, if you don't fit the culture of the company, you can destroy my company.
Yes,
Right?
absolutely.
So know your values is the first thing for any entrepreneur. What are the values you want, and what's the culture you want? Whether you're a solopreneur or a $20 million company, you know. What are the values? What's the culture you want within your company? Know that, because that's how you define who works here. Yeah, that's how you define what works best in this group.
Absolutely. And you're going exactly where I wanted to go next, which
Oh,
was
I'm
talking
bad.
which was talking about the leadership tool that you've developed. Because obviously we want to help people understand how to start this journey and start really tapping into those values so that they're hiring the right people and spreading the right ripples out. So talk to us a little bit about this leadership tool, kind of where we find it, how it works, and just all the fun details. Oh,
I would love to. I could talk about this for hours. This is, you know, it was years in the making. This is a leadership self-assessment tool that I had for about 16 years as a PDF, and we completed about a month ago making it in a digital formatting that you can do. You can find it on my website, askdrdorothy.com, askdrdorothy.com. And what it is it looks at the five styles of leadership that I've noticed over my 30 years doing this work. And one is the thought leader. They are immensely creative, and they have amazing ideas, creative ideas. And if you have a product you developed, they may come up with five different ways that you can use it, five different different audiences you can appeal to, because you can approach it very differently. They're very creative. In their strengths, they are creative, they're very intellectual, they're very artistic, very, very evolved, very ethereal. But in their fear, in their vulnerability, they have existential fear. They can be frightened of anything. They can be frightened of people. They can be frightened of failure. They can be frightened of anything. And they may have no ability to actualize something, but they're extremely creative. And if that's who you are and you want to open a business, you know you need to bring in a business partner or an executive director, I don't care who it is in your roles, who is very pragmatic, who can make things happen. Because lots of great theoretical creative people don't know how to bring their dream to fruition, to make it happen. So you need to hire somebody who can help you do that. And you're the leader, you can be the CEO, but bring in a president or bring in an executive director, somebody, a partner who has that other skill set. Together, the two of you offset each other's strengths, because they may be able to actualize everything, but they don't have a creative thought in their head. And that's okay, because they take your ideas. And they know they're very charismatic. They can bring the people in. They can make it happen when that may not be your gift. So know where you are. And then there's another leader style that's a team leader. They're the ones that, once you define the culture of your company, they get everybody on board and they really live your culture. They live your vision. They live your values. And they make everybody fall in love so that everybody on your team has the same vision. So after a while, they're not working for you anymore. They're doing what they've come here to do. They're just doing it within your company. So everybody is living this shared vision, this shared dream. And you're feeding each other. You're supporting each other's growth. You're supporting each other's dreams coming to fruition. And you feed each other immensely. And the team leader can do that. Now, the team leader may have no desire to be the head of the organization. They love working with the small team and making it happen. And that's okay. And if you're a team leader, then know that, but you may need to bring a creative thought person in to help you take ways to expand the team, ways to make the team stronger, right? So we all support each other in this. And then there's a supportive leader who may never want to be the CEO or the COO, but they want to make the leader look fantastic. And they're comfortable having 90 people working for them. They just don't want to be on stage selling this company. They want to support the person who sells the company. Right. If you're a speaker, they make sure that the PowerPoint works. They make sure the books, all your books are on the table in the back and somebody's ready to sell them. They make sure everything's ready to go. They've supported you looking terrific. And then you have that visionary leader who loves being center stage. They're a great keynote speaker. They've got charisma. They've got charm. They've got the ability to bring people in because they're in love with the vision, and people fall in love with their passion, their vibrancy, and their aliveness. Then you have an organizational leader who could be in a room with no windows. Everything you create, they get to create procedures and protocols, which makes them so happy. And unfortunately, you have people like that who do it phenomenally well. And when they work for corporate world, they say, you are so good at creating procedures and protocols, we're going to put you in charge of 90 people. You can teach all of them how to do this. And they fail miserably because No. I love being alone and doing this and creating it. And then they'll say, God, I knew they weren't really good. And they were phenomenal at what they did. And so what it comes down to for me is we all have all five of these, but we may have 40% of one, 20% of another, 5% of this and 7% of this and so forth. Know your strengths, know your limitations, because then you know who to bring in so that your company can be successful. Because none of us have all of these extremely well developed. So know who you are. And, you know, when I was living overseas, my executive director, there wasn't a piece of paper that wasn't in order. So when I came back to the States every 2 months to teach and do speaking engagements and whatever, she said to me, I need your name on these five things. We need to discuss this. We need to do this. That kind of stuff would have driven me crazy. That is not my strength at all. She loved it. So she had a ball doing all of that stuff. I would just think, oh, Lordy, Lord, get me out of here. But she's thinking, this is so much fun. I love this stuff. So I knew what I needed. And she was perfect for me to have in my company. Perfect for me to have my company. And it just worked, you know? So you learn, where's your strengths? Where's your vulnerabilities? And yes, we can develop these skills, but when it's natural, it's a breeze. So know your style so you know who to bring in. And also know the ways, because each of these, and I'm not going to go into it, it's a long, long thing. Each of them has ways they self-betray. And they're very different. Each has ways in which they can expand their strengths. And each has particular vulnerabilities, particular ways they do defense. You know, the thought leader, when they go into defense, they read, I'm out of here. I'm not paying attention. The team leader, when they go into defense, become very, very needy. You know, the supportive leader, when they go into defense, they take on the illusion of victim and powerlessness, all right, and passive aggressiveness. The visionary leader, that out there, the charismatic one, when they go into defense, they can be extremely intimidating or seductive or manipulative. The organizational leader, when they go into defense, can be very rigid. But when they're in their higher self, they're an asset. So when you know your stuff and you know I'm in defense, this isn't my truth, this isn't who I want to be. I can see me right now. I'm feeling very rigid. I'm feeling very whatever. Okay, I need to go walk. I need to make a cup of tea. I need to do something. Because I'm not living in the truth of who I truly am. I'm living in my fear. And when we know that about ourselves without judgment, we can be the very best leader we are called to be. You know, so.
And this tool that you created helps people discover that about themselves. And so there you go, folks. If you are a leader, you want to step into that role, or you're already there in your corporation, you want to deepen your understanding of how to take yourself and your organization to the next level, go to Dr. Dorothy's website. The link is below in the description. Click on there, take that self-assessment, and of course, get on this woman's calendar if you want to go deeper. This has been just scratching the surface of what this woman can do for you. Are you kidding me right now? Dr. Dorothy, this has been an absolute pleasure. I will give you just the last few seconds here. Anything you want to leave us with, the floor is yours.
Thank you. My greatest wish for all entrepreneurs is massive success. Never pay too high a price. Do not lose yourself in the process. Remember, you are the gift you bring to everybody you work with. So the more you can be authentically you and take that risk to be you, the greater a gift you give to yourself, your partner, and to the world. We are called to make this world a better place, every one of us. And the way we do it best is by being the best of who we are.
Very beautifully said. Thank you so much for that. All right, folks, share this show with your friends. Share the show with people that are in that leadership position. Rewind as many times as you need. And again, Dr. Dorothy, thank you so much for being here. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was a joy. God bless and good luck. What a gift you are to people.
Thank you so much. Same to you. All right, everyone. Peace. We'll see you in the next one.